that like scientific Twitters have become really important. And I think that's like really amazing, because if someone's out there in their front yard and they're like, oh, here's a pretty bug. And then, you know, they get it on Twitter, then that's like a instantaneous way of saying, oh, you know, oh crap, now we have a spotted lanternfly. So yeah. In a way, I know people complain about technology, but in a way, I really like that that's a good kind of first response.
You know, I'll be the first to say social media is not for everyone, and that's totally fine. As an extension person, it is a part of what I do. Okay. It's, you know, it's not all of what I do. It's not none of what I do, but it's an important component to it, because social media is going to reach people that I would not reach otherwise, plain and simple. Twitter will reach a certain demographic. Facebook reaches a certain demographic. Instagram reaches a certain demographic, and on and on and on. There's a lot of really good research out there by the Pew Foundation, actually. Pew Organization Foundation, or Pew Research Trust. That's what it is. Anyway, they've got a lot of good research on what demographics use what social media platform. I mean, tons of information. And I use those three that I mentioned, you know. So for me, Instagram is kind of the least of my three. That's more, here's a cool bug type of thing, right? Here's a cool plant. This is what's blooming now, right? Calorie pear is blooming now in North Georgia or something like that. Facebook for me is much more, here's a new workshop coming up, because there's a lot of people that use it for that thing. Here's a workshop. Here's something else that's happening. That's another place where I'll say, you know, Southern Pine Beetle Activities, Central South Carolina, right? And then Twitter, like you said, is much more academic oriented. It's a great way for me to learn things. You know, I've got peers on there from which I learn all sorts of stuff all the time. It's a great way to do some mentoring. You know, I know there's a lot of younger academic, you know, students on Twitter, whether they're actually enrolled in school or not. There's a lot of people on Twitter that want to learn stuff, and I am happy to, you know, share the information I have or share. And that, you know, Twitter goes beyond just the science stuff, just here's a, you know, whatever crazy bug. That's where you can get a lot of good discussions on, you know, what does it mean to be in grad school? How do you get through grad school? How do you get through undergrad? How do you get a job? How do you get, you know, what if you don't want to go into academia? Then what do you do? You know, I've done the non-academic thing, and I've done the government thing, I've done the academic thing. So I think perspectives are good. It's good to have some different perspectives on there. And, you know, it's, yeah, and it's helped me connect with a lot of different people. I mean, this is how, that's how this podcast came about, right? It's from Twitter, if I remember right.
That's correct.
So, yeah, so it's a really good medium for me. Now, Twitter can suck, don't get me wrong, but you can choose who you follow and don't follow. You know, and I've got a pretty strict no politics rule for my own Twitter that I use. I'm just not going to deal with that on Twitter. So that's, you know, I just keep that stuff out of there. It's pretty easy to put up whatever gates you want, and then just let the rest flow. So that's kind of what I tell people. Yeah, that's what I tell people to say, social media sucks. Well, then just, you're following the wrong people if it sucks. You know, you get to choose. This is one of the few things where you really are in the driver's seat. You know.
Yeah, the NNGA Twitter is actually a month old today, I think, actually.
Yeah.
It is like brand spanking new. We started on Facebook. The demographic of the NNGA are usually retired folks who have the time and money to plant trees. So we're seeing a younger demographic come in, especially with the how silvo and polyculture has silvo pasture has become so popular. So we're getting more involved. So we currently have around 2,000 members on our Facebook group, but again, our Twitter is still very tiny. But what I love about Twitter is that in the scientific community, everyone has it. Like every nature conservancy branch or chapter extension has it. Every national park has it. And I think that's so fascinating, because you get the microscopic look at the macro level. So I like following the NNGA account follows all like the weather, the National Weather Services, because, okay, I'm interested in knowing, you know, I'm not from Duluth, Minnesota, but I like to see what the weather is there to see what it affects. And that's going to affect the different farmers because we have members everywhere. So you're exactly right. It is great. And advvocacy is a pet project of mine. So I love that you discuss, Twitter is a really good way to get on there to see, how to survive X in graduate school. Yes. If you're listening to this and you're a graduate student, it's okay. You will be okay.
Yeah. You will be okay. It's probably going to suck for a while, but you will be okay. And the key is figuring out that balance. It's so funny. Like the old school mentality about graduate school is it sucks. It has to suck for you to make it. And we're going to beat it into you before you get through. But it doesn't have to be that way. That's, honestly, people that think that way are eventually going to die and they'll be replaced by younger people and different people who don't think that grad school has to totally suck. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, my grad school was great. Like I had the most awesome mentors, but I know some people don't have awesome mentors. And I realize now how fortunate I was at that time to have people that cared and that said, yeah, go take your, 2-hour lunch break to go to the gym and play basketball or go take a vacation. I didn't think much of it then, but, in hearing some of the horror stories, I've thought of like, whoa, that is unbelievable,
Yeah, I got in trouble for having a wedding. So, yeah, I totally get it. Yeah. What, you're going to take your time off to get married? What?
Where's your priorities?
Yeah. So, and I think actually that would be another interesting podcast episode is talking about graduate school and academia in itself. But I hope to see, that's one of the goals of this podcast too, is to reach some of those folks too, some of these graduate student folks, and give them a resource as well, and not just reach our established growers. So I'm trying to think of like how else we've done this, but like I know my co-host, well actually I was just talking about her, Amy Miller, she's in graduate school she's working on Blossom End Rot and Chestnuts. And so I get to hear her graduate student kind of discussions. So hopefully we'll reach more people like her. But yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. When I was coming up through, everything was just like, yeah, it might suck, but just keep it all inside. Don't tell anyone. Just push it way down.
Push it way down.
But it's a different time now, and people are much more open about things. Things are talked about now and discussed more than they ever were when I was a student, for sure.
Right. Absolutely.
Times are changing, and I do think a big part of having a successful graduate, well, successful is the wrong word. A big part of having a happy graduate experience is having a good cohort of people there and having some commonality. And from a departmental level, supporting that. When I was at Wisconsin entomology department was awesome, but we had, I think it was every Friday, we had this thing called Bugs and Suds, where one lab sponsored the drinks and we all met in the conference room and there were snacks and drinks. And at 3:30 or 4 o'clock, officially 4, but people started rolling in at 3:30. You just have some beers and talk to people.
That's
and you
amazing.
Just, have the chips, have the cheese, whatever, And it was just a very nice, relaxing end of the week. A lot of us grad students would start there and then head downtown and just hang out and do stuff. At Iowa State, when I was there for my master's, there was a group we had, a grad student association, but we always met at a local establishment downtown. We'd all get drinks and we'd order a pizza from next door and we'd talk about, well, what do we have to do? Here's our business. All right, we're done. Let's just relax now. So, and I do feel lucky I came in with some really good cohorts of people who are still great friends today, and that's kind of how, that's kind of the type of thing that makes grad school fun. And yeah, it's hard. Of course it's hard because you're building a career at that point, but it can be hard. And it doesn't have to suck.
So exactly.
Two mutually exclusive things.
And I also find it ironic that folks that are in programs like forestry, where you're learning how to be a good steward for an ecosystem, sometimes your grad school ecosystem itself isn't that healthy. So, but that's again, talk for another day.
That sure has.
Oh my goodness. But Yeah, I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic. So kind of what are your 5 or 10 year goals? Like, what would you like to see Extension continue to do, or maybe do and start a new project that you've thought about that you haven't done yet?
That is an awesome question. All right. One program that we're starting this year, and admittedly, we took the idea from a couple places that did this last year. It's called this Bradford Pear Bounty Program. So we're asking people in the Clemson area to cut down their Bradford pear tree in their yard, take a picture with it, and then bring it to our event on the 29th in Clemson, and we will give them a free native replacement tree.
So we're
trying to A, help people make the connection between Bradford and Calorie Pear, B, get rid of the Bradford pears on the landscape, and C, diversify the urban canopy a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would love to see this program expand to multiple cities in South Carolina and throughout the eastern U.S. It mm-hmm. was an awesome program that was first started last year by the city of Fayetteville, Arkansas, and also over in St. Louis, Missouri. You know, they should get credit for the initial idea, and I'm trying to help promote this idea everywhere. I think it is a great program. And we've had, you know, really good response so far. So there's one of my extension goals, is to get that program, you know, going more and more and more. I do know that Auburn, Alabama is going to do a very similar program this year. And I think I read that somewhere up in Maryland might be doing it too. So I'd like to think the word is starting to spread. From a research perspective, we need to know a lot more about how invasive species get to North America. And, you know, being an entomologist, my big focus is on the wood boring stuff. And this is where, you know, it doesn't matter if the tree's a nut producer or a cone producer or whatever. A lot of stuff gets in our commerce and dunnage and pallets and some of that things. But we don't have any real good data on how often that happens or what countries are our major, do we have the major issues with, right? It would be great to, and I'm working to try to get some sort of large continent-wide study about where and what are the actual risks of stuff coming over in woody things. You know, it's going to take work with APHIS. It's going to take Customs and Border Patrol in there. It's going to take multiple institutions. But I think we need to have some sort of scientifically valid, totally unbiased assessment of stuff that comes over to see what countries, you know, we can probably guess which countries have, you know, are most risky to us. And those are going to be the ones where we get the most stuff, right? There's a reason that most of these big, bad, invasive things we have are from China, because look at the trade balance, right? Tons of stuff comes from China every day. The odds are there that emerald ash borer is from China, laurel wilt's from China. Right. I mean, it just makes it's common sense almost. But to really know, you know, we don't have any really good data. So that's something I'd like to get going from a research perspective, is to figure out, you know, where are the risks and what are they? On a more local level, I'm working hard to figure out how can we provide our landowners with better, more effective management tactics for all these invasive plants. You know, and sure, you could spray everything with herbicide and it will die, but I think there's a better way to incorporate prescribed fire, mowing in some cases, and herbicide. You know, timing is going to matter. Active ingredient of the herbicide is going to matter. All this stuff matters. And so putting all those puzzle pieces together to be able to eventually tell people, hey, let's look at Calorie Pear, for instance. If you've got an old field that's mostly grass, but it's full of 5 to 8 foot tall Calorie Pears, you can do this and then this and then this, and it'll be free. If you've got a field that is mostly Calorie Pears under 3 feet tall, you can do this and then this, and it will be mostly free. You know, and at what time? So I would really like to eventually be able to have some nice pointed things to give people to say, this is what you got. Okay, here's what you do.
Right.
So those are the long-term goals. Yes, exactly. And that action plan is going to depend on what you're dealing with in the field.
Right. I mean, it's context is always really important. And I really like how you're approaching this issue, because you are keeping in mind what people are most recalcitrant about, and that's A, they're lazy, which I totally put myself in, and B, they're cheap, which I also totally put myself into that. So, you know, like that you're approaching this not as a, you need to tear out all your beautiful ornamental pear trees, but, you know, here's other options, here's how we can help you, here's how we can mm-hmm. help each other with minimum amount of work that you have to do and a minimal amount of money.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of funny that you said that. The general public, and I'll totally speak in broad terms here, it's like dealing with a toddler. Okay. And I've got young kids. We've been through the toddler phase, but I know what I'm talking about here. If you just go up to them and take something away, they are going to throw a fit, right? Nobody likes someone in authority to tell them what to do with their life. But if you take something away and give them something that's acceptable and better, that's cool. No big deal, right?
Yep.
Like, here, give me the fork. Here's a toy car.
Exactly.
Then everything's cool. But if you just go take a fork away from a two-year-old, they're going to be upset, even mm-hmm. though they could seriously poke an eye, like legitimately poke an eye out. Mm-hmm. So it's all about that trade, you know. And yes, people love free stuff. that's a big one. And even with that program, you know, you may or may not be surprised how many people are upset that we're going to move their tree for them. It's like, look, we can't do everything, man. I mean, we're trying to help you here. So it's a balance, you know, and it's tricky sometimes, but there are some things. And I think there's a lot of people that want to do – there's a lot of people out there that want to do the right thing. They just are looking for someone to help them figure out what the right thing is.
Exactly.
There's a lot of great people out there that are happy. So many people have said, thank you for this program. We hate that Bradford pear. Now we have an excuse to cut it down and put something else mm-hmm. in. That is the stuff that keeps us going, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's awesome. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. So, it's tricky though. You know, it's a constant learning process. And you know, I'm sure I'll be learning until the day I retire of different things. And the social media is another, you know, that's a black hole. You can spend a lot of time dealing with people's comments on Facebook, but that's not a good way to get information out there to people, right? That's
exactly.
just, you know, angry people. And in multiple cases, there's been people that have jumped onto a Facebook thing and been extremely critical. And I'm easy to find. I'm a public worker. You can Google me and find my phone number and email very easily. Every time I say, just call me. Please just call me and let's talk about this. And no one ever calls. So
yeah, it's funny how that happens. It's easy to yell.
It is funny how that happens. Yeah. From the anonymity of a screen somewhere. Nobody ever calls.
Yeah.
So weird. I have noticed that usually stops them from commenting when you put that out there.
Exactly.
So that's usually at this point, you know.
And it's a very non-confrontational way to handle it. Be like, I hear your point. Why don't you give me a call and we can talk about it further? And suddenly it shuts them down.
Yeah. I know there's one guy out there that's had my phone number given to him multiple times. I'm still waiting for a call. So we'll see if that ever happens.
Some people just like to argue for the sake of arguing, but yeah.
I know, they do.
Yeah, I mean, you made another really good point. And in fact, I was at OEFA, which is a large conference in Ohio. It's an ecological and organic conference. And one of the presenters was talking about, like, the internet is too big. If you're going to Google how far away you want to space your trees, you're going to get, like, 8 different answers. So finding and understanding good channels of communication is sometimes difficult, but it's incredibly important. And I think, you know, both of us, that's our jobs, is to educate the public and say, hey, you know, we are here to give you the right information and to help you with what you need. And it's I feel like that's a job in itself. And sometimes I feel like I'm yelling into a void.
Yes, indeed. Avoid. That's exactly right. You know, but at the same time, for every one of those instances, there's a case where you can really get through to somebody and someone, you know, someone gets it, you know, whether that's in person or online. And, you know, I think it was Lee Greenwood with the Don't Move Firewood campaign. She told me at one point, the public is like this bell curve where you've got a sliver of it on the right who believe everything you say. right? And I mean talking about the right side of the bell curve. They believe you regardless. There's a sliver on the left who think you're full of crap regardless of what you say, right? And then there's a great big chunk in the middle who are willing to listen and or maybe haven't formed an opinion. That's who I target. Like the ones on the left who think it's all government conspiracy, whatever. You're never going to be reached. I'm not going to bother. Mm-hmm. The ones on the right, I know you'll do the right thing because you're like, you know, completely into this. Everyone in the middle who's willing to listen, that's what I'm trying to reach. I'm trying to pull more of those people over into that right side.
Exactly. That's such a perfect way of putting it. And I need to remember to think like that.
I can send you really... I can send you my slide if you want.
You totally should.
Yeah. No, I use it all the time because it's so true. You know, I mean, there are some people that will never be reached. And that is what it is, right? Yep. I had someone once argue, well, you should try to reach them. And I said, no, I think my time, anyone's time, is better spent not doing that, but trying to reach more people that we have a chance at.
Exactly.
Right. You could spend hours or days working on one person, or I could spend a day and pull over 40. Like, what's the better bang for your buck? And I would even say, as the taxpayer, I would want whoever's getting my taxpayer dollars to make good use of it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a funny
from
system.
The cost benefit analysis. No, I sound like my husband.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're going to burn yourself out so much quicker if you're going to spend your time trying to convince people who aren't just going to listen. So
totally yeah. True. And, you know, there's also the other side of it. At the end of the day, I have tenure to make. I have reports I have to do. I have metrics that by which they measure my performance. Mm-hmm. And spending 3 days in a Facebook thread is not one of those metrics.
Yeah.
that is a horrible cost benefit analysis.
Exactly.
So, you know, yeah. We've all got bosses and boxes to check and all that. And the key, I think, especially in an extension role, is figuring out how to do that the most effectively.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
That's what I'm finding out anyway.
Yeah. I think that's just a good, just general life comment. I think you've hit on. So I thank you for that.
Yeah. General life. I've got general life. General life comments. I got plenty of those, so we'll see which ones stick.
Well, that could be its own podcast episode too.
Yeah, there's a bunch. There's a bunch that are getting generated here. You write these down. I hope.
I really like the Dave and Gina Talk Grad School podcast. I think that could really take off.
I would be all for that. I would be all for that because you know there's so many, especially on Twitter. There's so many discussions about. Surviving grad school. Surviving is a horrible word to use to describe that part of your life too, but that's a lot of times how it's described now. And I never thought of it that way. I don't think it was just, you know, it was unique at the time because I came from a family that didn't have any advanced education. Mm-hmm. So it was all very new to me. So I was just sort of there like, oh, no, this is what this is. And now we're doing this. Okay, that's cool. But it's just kind of there. But now it's, you know, looked at it surviving. And that's sad. It should be one of the best times of your life. You shouldn't have to survive that.
Yep. Yep.
So
it stressed me out so much that I ended up having a blood clot go through my heart and nearly kill me. So
Oh my gosh.
I totally understand the whole surviving grad school.
That's crazy.
If you're a graduate student, don't be like me. It will be okay. There are resources out there, and I will advocate until my dying breath that there are resources out there. So
there are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything like that, but I was not a healthy human. I'll just put it that way. And, and take care of your body. Don't self-medicate. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. And if your director or your advisor tell you to work 24 hours a day, you have to understand realistic expectations. So
Think about getting a different advisor.
Exactly.
That's
and
what
it's okay.
I would say.
It's okay to have a different advisor. I feel sure like this podcast has turned into catharsis time. Like,
I mean, it's funny because I think I've exercised all my demons, but I really do want, you know, people coming up through to know that it's okay to say no to things, and it's okay. And some of it is normal, which you're not going to be prepared for. And some of it is not normal. And I think the key is trying to figure out as a student, what's within that realm of normalcy,
Yes,
or
it's okay not to be
expectations.
perfect. Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, on the same time, yes, there will probably be weekends where you need to work, plain and simple. It's not a typical 9-to-5 job, especially if you've got stuff in a lab. You might have an experiment that, you know, I had grad school friends who would have to do experiments and they would have to sample every hour for, you know, 24 hours. And yeah, you probably aren't going to sleep for 24 hours, but then you're done and then take 2 days off, right? I
Exactly.
mean, it ebbs and flows. So it just depends on your situation, your project, and all that type of thing. And everyone's got their own biorhythms, right? So I was always up pretty early and in there, and then I was out of there by 4 o'clock, and other people didn't roll in till 10, but they stayed till, you know, 6. And it's okay to have those different biorhythms. Everyone gets stuff done at a different time.
Exactly. Ugh, man, I just feel like we can have another hour discussion on graduate student advocacy, but unfortunately we are running out of time. But I really, really want to thank you for joining me today. I love your insight and the way you look at things, and I love your passion for educating and communicating. I mean, I'm all about the communication, and that sounds exactly what your role is to communicate with the public or communicate with folks in a professional way to discuss invasive species. So thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, Gina, thank you for having me on. It was awesome, and happy to do another one if you ever want to talk about if you want to dive into grad school, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. I don't know if our Go Nuts podcast, like I don't know about you, but again, I love learning, so I have like a billion ideas and not enough time. So I'd love to do a podcast on
Yeah.
that.
Oh man.
Oh man.
Yeah. So many. But
Yes.
no, thank you for having me on. You're right. I love educating people, and you know, I take my job, like to think I take my job very seriously, but I've also got a fairly realistic view of the world, and I try not to get too tight about things. So I've got a fairly decent sense of humor about it all too. And you know, one of the things I've learned is it's okay to laugh at yourself. I
It
think
is.
it's not good to take yourself too seriously, and I really try not to do that. I think a lot of my friends and colleagues would agree, but it's served me well. It keeps things pretty level-headed, and it makes it a lot easier for people to listen to you if you don't walk in there on some sort of high horse.
Exactly. If you're just willing to listen and you are that center part of that bell curve, then you're
Yep.
gonna make it further in life. And that, I mean, it's regards to anything. So people out there, listeners out there, try to be that center of that bell curve.
That's right. Don't be way on the left
No,
of the bell curve, right? Don't be
yes.
a non-believer before you even have a chance.
Exactly. All right. And so with the barking of my dog, we will call it a morning. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Thank you,
Take care.
Gina.